for time, but we're glad to see all of you. And this is Elizabeth Austin. We are really honored to have her here in the village for her third time. Last time in the snow, or first two times in the snow?
Yes.
Yeah, so first summer experience of Holden Village. She works in Seattle at Children's Hospital in marketing and pastoral physical care, and her passion is creative writing and getting some reflective writing going on with people who are new or seasoned writers, and we're really excited to have you. Just so you know that this is a recorded session, so anything you say will be included in the recording. Share it away, just so you know that. I'm going to go make a few more copies because there's so many of you lovely people, and then I'll be back. But welcome.
I'm delighted to be back. I'll talk in a moment about what we're going to do with the time, but I want to just kick us off with a poem. This is a poem that that I've carried with me for a long time, and I hope that many of you have heard it before, but for those of you who haven't, this is one that I wanted to make sure was in the room. By writer named Mary Oliver, and it's called Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the rivers and the mountains. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. So that was the first Mary Oliver poem that I fell in love with. A friend gave me her New and Selected. I had not read her work. I don't know how I had not met her work before then. This was about 20 years ago. I read that poem and I stopped reading the book because that was as much as I could take. And I wrote it into a small notebook that I brought with me as I boarded a plane and flew on a one-way ticket to Quito, Ecuador, needing to remake my life. My heart was broken. I was leaving the theater, which was the only thing I'd done since I was about 9. And I had left a job running a small not-for-profit theater company. I had no keys. I owned nothing. And I needed to reinvent myself. And that poem was the keel, the rudder, for 6 months of walking around and trying to learn how to be instead of do. And one of the most valuable things helping me learn to be and not do all the time was reflective writing. It was something that I had done kind of instinctively as a child. Some wise adult, when I learned how to write, put a notebook in my hand. But I had also been schooled in various kinds of therapeutic reflective writing when I was in therapy for a number of years, recovering from childhood sexual trauma. I used reflective writing to mourn the sudden and quite strange death of my oldest brother. But I also used reflective writing to make decisions. I went through a several-year process of deciding quite consciously not to have children of my own. Writing was the way I navigated that. But writing was very much how I navigated my movement from being a very focused, passionate theater artist to the state of unknowing. And then bizarrely on the other side, but I say bizarrely because really what's the only thing less practical than being a stage actor in the United States? It's being a poet. But writing was how I navigated that decision-making process. And I have heard a rumor that there might be one or two people at Holden Village who are in a state of transition. So that's why each time I've come, I've offered some session on reflective writing, because it has become such an important tool for me that I teach it really everywhere I go. And for the last 6 years or so, I've been teaching it at Seattle Children's Hospital. As Wendy mentioned, I have this interesting hybrid role. I work in the marketing department, writing clinical content for the hospital's website, but I also work with pastoral and spiritual care. And I do regular poetry and reflective writing sessions with palliative care team, physicians, nurses, social workers, and then I do a couple of open sessions every month that any staff member can come to. And there's been wonderful word of mouth as people find this useful for processing, I think, not just the kinds of things they deal with, as you can imagine dealing in a place like a children's hospital, but also their own lives. So, thank you. It's funny, as a poet, I'm used to competing with espresso machines and giving readings at coffee shops, but this is the first time I've had to compete with a skill saw. So that's kind of the why of this at Holden and wanting to do this here. I think that many of you, can I see a show of hands, how many of you have been in a similar session with me in one of my previous visits to Holden? Oh, excellent, I don't have to say everything new. Great, I can say what I said last time. Okay, good. Can I also see a show of hands, how many of you consider yourselves journalers in some form or another, occasional? Great. As you're willing to, could some of you talk about how you use your journal? What do you use your journal for? How do you approach journaling?
Well, when I'm away from home, time slows down. And I write just a little bit each day as I do here. And then I can go back 10 years later and just a flood of memories come back to some of those.
Yeah, so when time opens up, when we're away from our regular routines, it can be a wonderful way to write into that time, and then we also have that when we go back to our workaday worlds. How about others? How else do people use their journal?
For processing, whatever emotions or transitions or whatever are going on in my head. I'm a very external processor, so if there's not someone to talk it out with, like talk it out in my journal. I could look back through the pages and just look at by the size of the writing what mood I was in. So if I'm just in the middle of some despair or something, just getting it out on something.
Then I think you will find what I'm talking about very familiar. Mm-hmm. That's very much what I'm talking about. Yeah. How about others? Travel journals?
I guess I only write really when I have a lot of downtime. And I realize I'm thinking of things that now make sense. And I write down what makes sense because I'm always looking for the truth. And that's one of the times that I really find it.
Yeah, so what I hear and what you're saying is writing as a kind of inquiry, a kind of following the trail to that truth.
Yes.
No.
Sometimes if I'm having views that are contradicting each other on how to make a decision, I'll put them in dialogue on the page.
That's a great way to use it. Yeah.
When the whirlwind seems to be out of control, it's a way to sort of center and get present to what's happening now.
Yeah, absolutely. I see a hand over here.
Yeah. For probably the first 5 years after I retired, my journal was, for me, accountability for use of my time.
So like a record of what you've done? Is that how you used it?
Yeah, and thoughts about how I was using my time.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I've used it a variety of ways, but one way that hasn't been mentioned yet was devotionally. So if I'm praying the Psalms, then maybe write a response. Reflect on something that struck me, or a poem, or a piece of writing, or as a devotion practice.
Yeah, a responsive,
right.
Responsive
way to go. Dialogue with it.
Yeah, we'll also touch on that. That's also one of the things I'm talking about. I saw another hand, I think.
Yeah. To be totally honest, I use my journal to like win the arguments I can't win in the real world.
Yes. Anybody else vent on paper?
Vindicate myself.
Yeah. I'm going to argue it's a very healthy use of paper. It's a much healthier use of paper than of one's friends. Right? You know, there's a lot of things I've vented on paper that I didn't then need to vent in the direction of my husband.
I think it's great for that. Thank you. Well, I use it to write down things that I cannot believe are happening.
Yes.
Especially if there's a lot of them all in a space of time.
Yeah. And what's the effect of that on you? When you do that, what do you, are you aware of what's happening in your body when you do that?
Yeah, I think I kind of relive it a little bit and I try to put it in a little bit in perspective. Whether it's really funny or really amazing or, I mean, no matter what it is, I think I can find a drawer for it, if that makes sense, in my head.
Spoken like a visual artist. You can get a visual metaphor, right? Put it in the drawer. Yeah. Is there anybody who wants to add anything that hasn't been mentioned yet as a way to use a journal?
I used a lot for a couple of years during a time of processing and healing work.
Mm-hmm.
And through prayer work, too.
Yeah. I've asked people sometimes whether or not they journal, and I've heard people say, well, I don't write every day, so I'm not a journaler.
Mm-hmm.
I don't write every day. Some days don't accommodate writing, and I'm still a writer. And the one thing I hope you'll take away from the time today is that you don't need oceans of time to write. I'm going to argue you need about 7 minutes. It's going to feel luxurious if you have 15, but if you have 5, 7, 8, 10, 15 minutes, you can have an engagement with yourself on the paper that has the potential to be useful. So what I'm presenting today is a way of thinking about writing that is going to tap into a lot of things that have already been said. I hope that I'll say something useful to those of you who are already pretty far down this path. So I want to introduce some principles. We'll have some time to experiment with writing, and then hopefully we'll have some time for conversation about what comes up out of this. So I'm going to pass out a handout, and mostly this handout is the thing that enables me not to speed talk, because I normally do this session in a little bit longer than an hour, and so there are things on the handout that, now that I know they're on the handout, I don't have to speed talk at you, I know that you'll get them. So it's the same handout coming around. I also made a handout of the Mary Oliver poem, so I'll pass that around as well. Thank you, Wendy. I think Wendy's got more copies, so if you... I also want to, while the pages are going around, I just want to give a shout out of thanks to Linda Evans, who turned me on to this beautiful book by Jan Richardson called Circle of Grace. It's a book of blessings, really beautiful, and so the first poem that it's excerpted is from this book. And I believe you found this in the Holden bookstore, is that?
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Does everybody have a pen and something, some paper?
Yeah.
Okay, does anybody?
Pen?
Pen?
Are you getting Mary Oliver?
Yeah.
Pen? Anybody? Thank you. So, reflective writing is different from other forms of writing in one really crucial way. The point of reflective writing is not to create something that you might share with others. The point of reflective writing is the process of doing. It's a tool for listening, for opening that door toward the inside, as Jan Richardson so beautifully put it. So I see others fanning themselves. I thought maybe I was having a hot flash, but maybe it's warm in here.
It is.
Could we maybe just open these doors to try to get some air moving through? That one we might leave closed just because the saw is that direction. And I know better than to compete with something like that.
Did you say the process of reflective writing is to listen, for listening?
It's about listening. And the analogy I like to use is that in reflective writing, we're using the pen and paper as a stand-in for the wise, compassionate friend we wish we would be for others, and we are becoming that wise, compassionate friend to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And reflective writing is where we practice that. Because sometimes the reflective writing, the things that come up, it's hard to be compassionate. It's hard to befriend ourselves. And this is why I like to encourage these small doses of writing. Because if you save up all of your angst and decision making, and you've got like all of Saturday morning blocked out, you're going to do 4 hours of reflective writing. I guarantee that you will be cleaning your oven, cleaning out your closets, you know, hosing down the garage before you will take on something like that. But most of us can find a little bite of time, 10 minutes. I use my phone's timer so that that time is bordered, so that I know that it's going to end. Because the other thing I encourage about reflective writing, unlike other forms of writing, is that once your pen hits the paper, that you keep your hand moving. Not necessarily to write fast, but to write continuously. And this is part of that idea of welcoming whatever comes up. And when we let the pen lead, often things that are buried in our bodies will begin to come up, particularly if we have begun to develop a kind of trustworthiness with ourselves. So using this analogy of the trusted friend, you know, most of us, when we meet somebody, we don't immediately pour our heart out to them. We get to know them a little bit. We say something that makes us feel a little vulnerable, and we see how it goes. And if it goes well, we might be a little more vulnerable with them. This is true with ourselves. If you sit down to have a compassionate conversation with yourself, and there's nothing but judgment, and you leave it at judgment, it's going to be much harder to come back to that. But here's the thing about it. If you sit down to write and nothing but judgment comes out, it's possible to have compassion for the judger and for the judgment. And partly it comes from just noticing. The opening can be as simple as, wow, that's a lot of judgment. Right? Just that acceptance of, that's judgment. And part of what's different about that is to say that it's judgment is different than saying, that's true and that's the end of the story. The other thing that I think I forgot to put on your handout that I want to say is that the key, or one key for me anyway, to reflective writing, and where it has also become a way, I think, to develop compassion not only for ourselves but also for others, is to ask this question. What else is also true? What else is also true? This can be super helpful if you find yourself writing and you're writing yourself into a corner. Maybe that judging voice is coming up. Maybe a kind of hopelessness is coming up. Maybe it's all venting and it's 2 minutes in and you're already tired of yourself. Asking this question can shift everything. And notice that it's what else is also true. What else is also true? It may be true that you're pissed, right? That you feel petty and disappointed. But it may be also true that you're sad, that you're heartbroken, or that you're done. Like you're done. Like this is, you know you're done, right? This is such a powerful question. A couple of people have talked about this already, but I just want to mention it because I think it can be such a potent transformative thing, that the process of writing, particularly if you do it in the same notebook, or I like, I'm still getting over 12 years of Catholic school, so I like to write on paper without lines, the bigger the better. So I write on the back side of scrap paper, and I just will pile up that scrap paper. But when I go back through and reread that, I can see where I've been. So particularly if you are in a period of transition, if you're navigating something, keeping those pages together will give you a record, and you may find at some point you feel like, oh, this is the same swirl. I'm writing the same thing I wrote 3 months ago. You have 3 months ago's writing, and you can go back and check. And maybe some similar things are coming up, but there's probably some other tendrils as well. So it can be a way to accompany ourselves through change. And as others have said, that it can also be a safe space, a place to let out what we might not want to say even to our best friend, even to a therapist. That there may be things that we are barely ready to hear ourselves, let alone let anybody else hear. But the more we develop that sense of compassion and trust, the more willing we will be to hear ourselves. I want to pause because I made it sound a little bit like this was going to be horrible because we're going to do reflective writing and all this crud is going to come up. What is also true is that this is one of the ways we access our own wells of wisdom, our own sense of connection to the divine. There's a quote on there from the man who was my first poetry teacher, Jack Myers. I believe it's something like, the secret that artists know is to collaborate with chaos. Right? That energy that's coming up in you as you write, whatever that is, that sense of chaos, there's creativity in that. There's potential for change in that. There's movement in the chaos. And so the process of following the pen may also be where we discover something we didn't know we knew, felt, believed, some other voice may assert itself through that writing, particularly if you're willing to let your body speak through your pen. Most of us, I think, are schooled to think of writing as a mental activity that's linear. So if you write professionally, if you are someone who's been schooled in writing, maybe academic writing, this may feel very strange. This may feel really odd and aimless. Immerse yourself in the odd and aimlessness of it. Oddness and aimlessness of it. That's the point. To be in a time of not knowing. And again, it's bordered by time. The alarm is going to go off. And the other thing about this is it can be a way that we build tolerance for not knowing. When we enter into writing without a destination, we're cultivating our capacity to sit with not knowing where we're going. And this has implications for creative work. Because if we always know what the destination is and we're just navigating to a fixed endpoint, we've closed off many, many possibilities. But when we've launched ourselves into something with a sense of curiosity and compassion and a willingness to see what's there, everything opens up. Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Excellent. The time gods are with me so far. So a couple of key concepts that I advocate. You probably gathered that I suggest working longhand. Anybody have any thoughts about why I might, other than that we're at Bolden, we don't all have laptops in front of us, but I would advocate this anywhere. Anybody have any thoughts about why longhand?
Because sometimes you realize if you're doing it on the computer, you deleted something that you wish you still had back.
Yes, it's awfully easy to just highlight and delete. Yeah.
You have time to think while you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
Close to type.
Slows us down. Yeah.
Brain function is totally different with keyboarding.
Amen. They're going to start to bring back teaching cursive in the schools.
Good.
Because the neurologists are telling us that something important is happening to the brain when you learn to write cursive and when you write cursive. Something different even than happens when you print.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any hand up?
Yeah.
meeting and didn't want to talk about that.
Why longhand was the question?
Keyboarding, I try to go back and correct mistakes.
Yes.
Edit.
It uses our body.
Yes, yeah. This is a very static place, right? This is already different. And here's the other thing, for those of you who are avid journalers and already write longhand, I challenge you to put the pen in your non-dominant hand. Try writing with your non-dominant hand and see where you go.
On the other hand, one of the things I find advantageous about doing it on the computer is I can sit there and I can close my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's something I can't do when I'm writing on paper. Mm-hmm. It's like I can like put my head down and just type and like not even look at the words that I'm writing. And so then it's just pure ideas coming out. So
I get that, but I'd be curious about what's happening in your body, because it's interesting that you said pure ideas. That kind of writing might be very useful for you for certain things, but I'll be curious to see if you experiment with this a little bit, if different kinds of things come up.
Yeah, it seems like that would be
yeah. I mean, I definitely use a keyboard. I don't travel without this, right? But when I want to get my body involved, when I want to be working from an intuitive place, I need to be writing on it. I also, because I write professionally at the hospital for a living, this posture brings out linear writing. I don't compose poems initially on a computer for the same reason. Yeah.
So this is totally not writing, but like, then what's the difference between writing and like having a conversation with myself when I'm walking down a trail? Just really embodied
point.
And also verbal.
I would say we can do both, right?
Cool. I'm just curious.
It's one of the things I love about hiking by myself. Yeah, is that those kinds of conversations. One of the things that happens when we write, though, is that the desire to form syntax of sentences is a kind of shaping mechanism, right? We're not writing random words. We're writing out thoughts. We're writing out sentences. Although, let me also back up and say, if you find it hard to write sentences, you can start writing lists. You can start with just phrases, words. But the process of writing alters our thinking, because there's also a linearity implied on the page, the spatial relationship of the language across the page. So fortunately, we live in a world where we can do both.
Cool, thanks.
What else did I want to say? So I talked about time. Oh, getting started. One of the most useful things I've found is to pose a question to myself. So I want to ask you to settle into your chair. Can everybody put their, once you've finished writing whatever thought you're writing, you could put your pen down, settle into your chair. Everybody take a big, deep breath in and just release it easily through your nose, your mouth, whichever you prefer. Feel the way the chair is holding you. Take another deep breath in. Let it go. Is there a question or a series of questions that you've been carrying around in your body today or this week? Is there some question that's kind of up for you right now? If there is, go ahead and pick up your notebook again and write that question down. One of the questions that I've been carrying around ever since Roy's session yesterday is, I'll write it down. What am I willing to change in order to create space for a daily spiritual practice? Thank you for that. Is anybody else willing to share what their question is that's kind of roiling around for them?
Well, I think as we all age, a common question, certainly for me right now, is books are being phased, getting married, and the rest. What is the best way to use the time I have left, whatever that is, how much that is?
What's the best way to use the time I have? And that may be in a big picture, like grappling with mortality way, or it might be with a, I am working a job that's 70 hours a week and I need to do something else. How do I manage? What's the best way to use the time I have? Anybody else? Question?
Mine's very similar, but very succinct, but parallel. And that's what's next.
What's next? Yeah. Beautiful. Not yes and no questions, right?
Yeah.
What will I do without her?
What will I do without her? Yeah. Yeah.
Find myself I'm trying to think about it. It's like, will this week be enough? How can I make this week be enough? Just that question of enough, so that I can go back into the world refreshed or with what I need, you know.
If you don't have a question, you might consider one. Come right back. You might consider a question like, what am I making room for? What am I inviting into my life? Or what am I embracing about this season of my life? And what am I resisting? Or one of my personal favorites, what am I suppressing in order to fit in? You have one?
Oh, very short time frame on this one. I don't have a supervisor this week, so I'm happy with them. Am I in the way?
Can you rephrase that so that it's not a yes or no question?
How do I accomplish my task without being in the way?
Okay. Can you feel how different that is than the first question you posed?
Yes.
How do I accomplish my task without being in the way? So here's the thing about these questions. They're the launching points. Remember, this is destinationless writing. Our goal is not to answer these questions. Our goal is to enter into the questions and see where they lead us. So, you know, two sentences in, you may veer off into some completely other direction. Go. Right? And here's the thing. I'm not going to ask anybody to read their work out loud. You won't be turning these in, and for God's sake, they won't be graded. Right? This is for you. Okay? So can somebody repeat back, once I say go, what are we going to do?
Keep the pen moving.
Amen. What else?
What else is true?
We're going to ask ourselves, what else is true? Great.
Be open to whatever comes up.
Be open to whatever comes up, and as best we can to welcome whatever comes up. Say yes and. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to write for 10 minutes. Does anybody need more paper? Anybody need a pen? Paper or pen? Or both? Does anybody not have something to launch them? Because one other option is to take one of the lines of the Mary Oliver poem or one of the other statements from the paper I handed out and write that out and then see what comes after that to write in response to that. And as others have done, please feel free to get up and move around. I know those aren't the most comfortable chairs ever made, so feel free to move. Alright, we all good? Alright, find a way to bring that thought to a stopping point. like to ask you to read through what you just wrote and to underline, if you would, the five or six phrases or sentences that seem most important to you. Entirely subjective assessment, right? Not the best, not the most artfully, elegantly written. What are the five or six most important sentences in what you just wrote? Does anybody need more time? Now, those five or six sentences that you underlined, please circle or maybe make a list at the end of what you wrote, the five or six individual words that are most essential.
In those five?
In those five or six, of the sentences you underlined, what are the five or six really essential words? Just individual words. Don't worry, you get to keep everything you wrote. But we're just selecting these five or six most essential.
Yeah. Not necessarily a phrase, but like...
Individual words.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anybody need more time? So, was that different from other writing you've done? Anything unexpected happen? They don't want their money back? Anybody want to say anything about that experience?
I found myself asking a lot more questions than I usually do. A lot more questions.
And did that feel in the moment helpful?
I turned a different direction. Mm-hmm. You know, once I got in it, and then was able to answer questions for myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I teach English and writing, so I don't have trouble writing. But it was about the easiest I've ever written. It just, everything just flowed off the page.
Great. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes people who teach writing have a very hard time just letting it go. So I'm glad that it just went.
Yeah. I think I gave myself more grace.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Good.
I took you literally when you said get the technology out of the way of the thoughts, and I said there would be no punctuation at all, no crossing T's or dotting I's, no capitalization.
Yeah.
I was able to get more words down.
Cool. Can you still read it without crossing the T's?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, and you may find that the more you do this, the more you jettison things like spelling or punctuation. I think it was Liz, you were talking about your journal might have different size writing. You may find that you start very small and tidy and then something starts to come up and that writing gets a little wild. Yeah, Chuck.
I guess I like the process of it because like starting out with, well, no real goal in mind, a question, now it's mined five different pieces from that that now have given me some words that now give me opportunities to go out and explore all those. There's a lot of seeds.
Excellent. Yeah, so why did I ask you to do the underlining and the pulling the words out? What's up with that?
Yeah. Well, is that part of listening to ourselves?
Did it seem so for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, so first of all, it means we go back through what we wrote, right? And then we have a chance to hone in on certain things in a two-step process. And by the way, this is very different from revision, which we'll be talking about on Friday. This is still about continuing to open that door inward. Right. Were you going to add something?
I wasn't, but thoughts might require 1,000 words, but you might not be able to get all those thoughts down. So just the one word, it's like a note.
Exactly. And it's part of how this can help us move past. You all know what's meant by ruminating, right? It's when we just chew something over and over again, right? We just circle. It can be easy to do that when we keep things inside, but honestly, we can also do it on paper. I mean, we can just write ourselves into a circle. Mm-hmm. And so this process of going back through and underlining and essentializing can help break past that. And we can see, oh, my five most important words all relate to this one little piece of the writing. Like, oh, this is where the heat was. This is where I really got to something that I didn't know I felt or didn't know I believed or needed or knew or felt so strongly about. That it just takes that inquiry just that much further.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of like if you're decorating and you pick three different colors that you like, no matter what you do, you need to go back to those colors. Don't worry about it. Well, I chose this couch. Yeah, and it's the right color, but here's another couch. It's the same color. This couch doesn't matter because I like this one better.
Yeah, a certain kind of organizing principle. Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but I can see what you mean. Yeah. So, does anybody notice that if you take away the time we spent talking, that was about 15 minutes. Of writing and then essentializing into the sentences and the words, right? So I hope I've made my case that writing is not so much about time, it's about attention. The other thing to know is that writing is much easier to do this kind of writing. Well, let me stop with the blanket statements. You may find that sometimes it's helpful to write with someone else. And it can be as simple as going to a coffee shop and nobody needs to know that they're your writing group. Right? You just have that public solitude, right? But you may also find that there's somebody, maybe someone you live with, that you want to say, could we, instead of turning the news on, could we just spend 15 minutes and we'll each just write? And then you have each other to help you stay accountable for the day when you kind of don't feel like it. It's a lot like going to the gym or exercising, right? If you're walking, friend is showing up, I guess I'll put my shoes on, right? So that's what I brought today. Does anybody have questions or comments?
Do you ever burn what you write?
I have burnt what I've written sometimes. I'm also a great fan of the shredder. The shredder is very satisfying. It makes a munch, munch, munch noise, and then it gets recycled. Yeah, so that raises the question of what do you do with this stuff? What have other folks done with it? There's a lot of journalers in the room. What have you done with your journals?
What I've done is never journal because I'm always afraid that somebody's going to read it because I've read a lot of journals. family stuff.
Yeah. So does that mean that you wouldn't journal? Like, is that kind of a done deal?
It just means that I've started about 50 times and I always get about 3 pages in. And then I abandon it because I really don't want anybody to read that stuff.
Well, you could be a destroy-as-you-go kind of journaler. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you could write, read it back, and then destroy it.
Well, I liked the questions. It was easy for me to write today. And I have a thing growing inside about the way I am, and I like to figure out what it is. Mm. I've been working on it for quite a while, and I'm still working on it.
This might be helpful.
It might be.
Yeah.
I think you can also, you know, after you've completed this assignment, you know, write for the 10 minutes and then go through. And then you've got those 5 words, and if you could write those 5 words down and keep those in a journal.
Yeah, that's
true. And destroy the rest. Yeah. Because sometimes those, you know, the other stuff is just rubbish kind of stuff, you know, to get to where you need to be.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes
and that's
what
I found
it. The getting there.
Yeah.
Do you, aside from this, do you have any tips for how to write more true? Or sometimes when I record something, I'm recording it so that future me reads it and thinks, oh, good job, Margie. Or, but how is there a way to push yourself to be more true with your experience?
That's a wonderful question that, you know, you might consider doing something as simple as at the top of the page writing, this is just for me right now about what's true today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I think is
is at risk in the way many of us communicate in these fleeting, public, digitized ways of communicating, is the ability to turn our attention inward and really become aware of what is there. So Mo was talking last night in her leadership and advocacy session about the qualities of emotional intelligence and how one of the things that's needed is self-awareness. And self-awareness comes partly from being willing to not bullshit ourselves, you know, to really sort of turn the gaze inward and say, what I wish was there is not there today. And I'm going to be real about that. And I'm going to trust that this today, this kind of lumpy stuff, is not the whole story. But today, it's pretty lumpy. Right? Because it's, I feel very strongly that, and I feel this because this has been my lived experience. I have no clinical training. But that process of accepting what is actually there is the only way we move through it to the thing we want to be and do in the world. That was said very badly, but hopefully you know what I mean. That change starts with acceptance of what the givens are. If we're always pretending something else is happening, it gets very hard to deal with what's actually happening, because we're over here doing the song and dance, and there's this whole other thing here that we're very studiously avoiding. But that's why I also talk about this in terms of self-compassion, but also empathy, because I'm sure you can understand how if we are not able to do this for ourselves, we are kidding ourselves if we think we're able to do it for others. You know, to me, this is one of those places where we learn to love ourselves so that we can love others in all their lumpiness as well. Love coming to hold, and the conversation goes deep really fast. Thank you all for coming in out of the glorious sunny afternoon. On Thursday afternoon, we're basically going to read poems out loud and talk about poems of protest and poems of hope. We might do some writing if the time allows. On Friday, the focus will be a little more craft focus. We'll be looking at how we might take a first draft of a piece of writing and further it. My expertise, of course, is in poetry, but hopefully the things that we'll be talking about will be applicable to other kinds of writing. So, thank you again.
Thank you.